Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Desperate for changing, starving for truth. Closer to where I started, we're chasing after you. I'm falling even more in love with you. Letting go of all I've ever longed to. I'm standing here until you make me move. I'm hanging by a moment here with you.
I was listening to this song yesterday. I like it. It's by a group called Lighthouse. It's called Hanging by a Moment. So, in the matter of a week, you've seen historians and intellectuals petition the Pulitzer Board to rescind the Pulitzer Prize awarded to the New York Times and a reporter there for the 1619 Project because it said it's blatant factual errors, right? And its primary claim have been removed from any of the literature. And that was the real founding of the United States was the 1619, because that's when the first slaves got here. And the nation was founded to preserve slavery, right? So you have intellectuals. You have a renowned intellectual in the country who produces a piece about race by the name of Shelby Steele. You have him banned, right? You have him banned from his documentary being able to stream on Amazon because of Amazon's content police. Their censors said that an intellectual, a guy who's, I don't know if he's a PhD, I think he is, but works out of the Hoover Institute at Stanford, the renowned Hoover Institute, names like Stockdale, names like Mattis, and all kinds of other people are associated with this, right? His content gets banned less than a week later. You have Twitter censoring a story about Joe Biden that was originated by the New York Post. Because they say, oh, well, we're not sure about the origins or whatnot. Twitter has never, ever censored anything because of its origin or anything else that has to deal with criticism of the president. And then I didn't watch because I don't watch, but there were two debates last night. And everywhere I went that I would consider responsible journalism, as opposed to the other shit that's out there, every one of them remarked about how strikingly different the tone in the two debates was. That you had a moderator, you know, interrupting President Trump constantly. And then this softball interview / town hall that Joe Biden did. And so to me, all of that embodies the last 4 years that the nation has gone through. And the concern of somebody who's not the greatest partisan, in my opinion, is this. this is what a corrupt system looks like. This is what corruption looks like. And again, I don't draw any distinction between Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton. They all come from a murky, murky, murky pool. I'm being nice to the pool by not calling it a cesspool that they all deal in. And, you know, the sad reality is that Hillary Clinton launched this Russia thing. And when you follow the intelligence reporting, American intelligence people knew it. Barack Obama was briefed on it, and then his administration enabled it. I mean, it's, you know, and then you have a media that's been indignant for 4 years about how I mean, they were just, if you remember, after the 2016 election, they were just excoriated. Right, they were just hammered for being so out of touch. And then their defense was, well, we really didn't get it wrong. Oh, really? By what metric did you get it wrong? And then they went on to explain how their polls were really not wrong, right? That they just weren't nuanced enough. No, you're out of touch, you're tone deaf with the people that voted to elect somebody, right, that was outside of the Beltway, because Americans are sick of the Beltway. They're sick of a government that's so out of touch with them. And I would say embodied by the likes of the Bushes, the Clintons, right? The Pelosis, the Schumers, the McConnells, right? I think you see an American electorate that looks, and probably, you know, more than half looks at them and says, yeah, I'd rather roll the dice on that guy right there with all his craziness. I'm sick of this. So my own opinion is, but this is to me what it looks like. I mean, and it's to me, again, it's jaw-dropping to watch it on a daily basis, and everybody's okay with it. So, and again, Joe Biden, right? Is he the first, you know, high-ranking politician to have a kid who exploited his position for wealth? No, he's not. So the question relative to Joe Biden is, is him lying about his interceding on the behalf of his kid. That's the problem, okay? But he's not held to the same standard. But to watch it play out on a daily basis, honestly, talk about the fix being in, right? The media, right? Which, except for a small sliver of it, right, is they're advocates now. They're not reporters, they're advocates. And that's what their job is. Social media companies, they are advocates now. And so I think it's stunning to watch it play out as blatantly as it plays out, and then watch people try to backtrack when they get caught. For instance, Twitter CEO, a guy named Jack Dorsey, he's saying, "Oh yeah, well, we didn't handle that right." If you read what they did, here's what they did. The political actions taken Wednesday by Twitter, and to a lesser extent Facebook, went far beyond normal content moderation. Joe Biden supervised the Obama administration's Ukraine policy while his son Hunter sat on the board of a Ukrainian gas company called Burisma. The New York Post found copies of emails it says are between Burisma executive and Hunter Biden, including one in which the executive thanks Hunter for giving him the opportunity to meet his father. This is a Wall Street Journal editorial. The story might not change voters' minds, and for most it probably won't. President Trump has tried and failed to make Hunter's Burisma dealings a campaign issue. Has anybody seen that guy, by the way? But where is Hunter Biden? He seems to, you know, have left the pattern. Yet Twitter preemptively sprang to the defense of the Democratic nominee, taking extraordinary steps to stop Americans from reading it. Users who tried to share the link from the New York Post were shown a message that told them that they could not do so. But then listen to this. The New York Post Twitter account with 1.8 million followers was shut down, as was White House spokesperson Kayleigh McEnany's Twitter account. The Trump team campaign account was shut down, and even a political journalist by the name of Jake Sherman, his account was shut down. I mean, that's what happened. And so to me, you watch this in this democracy, and that one-sided application of whatever Twitter standards, squishy standard is stunning when you watch it. It's stunning when you watch it. And so it's to me disgusting to watch, you know, what our nation has become. And that is, there's an agenda, and they're going to stuff it down your throat. You wonder why people, you know, pick up weapons and will go out into the street. And that is their frustration with a system that is seemingly so corrupt. And it gets more blatantly and more blatantly corrupt all the time. So I don't think that sentiment in the country is going anywhere. And if Joe Biden is elected, right? If Joe Biden is elected, I think that what will happen is Joe Biden will have an incredible fight on his hands to try to hold anything close to what the people who elect him, the small sliver of the electorate that will elect him, believes is, you know, down the center. Because they're that group that migrates back and forth, right? You have people on the edges, they don't move. And there's people in the middle that voted for Trump last time that will vote for Biden this time, right? And so Biden's fight will be to fight the AOCs, the Bernie Sanders wing, all attempting to make the United States a socialist nation. And so I think that his 4 years are going to be difficult for him. And they're going to be good for the Republican Party. And then I don't know what Donald Trump is talking about. Those issues, can they be better embodied in a person that can be as confrontational but not as abrasive, that doesn't come with all the personal baggage that Donald Trump comes with? You know, in my opinion, I mean, to me, Nikki Haley, run Nikki Haley for president and run, who's the governor of South Dakota? What's her name? Kristi Noem, right? Run two conservative women. I mean, Nikki Haley, man, she lets it rip on people. And it's one of the things I love about her. Nikki Haley's no bullshit, man. She'll let it rip. But to me, the broader concern for anybody that has half a brain is, this is gross in our country, what's happened to our country. This is disgusting. And how do we get back to a point where we can have articulate debates, where we can have the same standard applied to two candidates? You know, how do we do that? Where does that come from? What do we do? Where do we go? And I don't know. And again, if you're watching this, the frustration level when it's so blatant is what sends people into the streets with weapons. I got an email the other day. What happens to people when you get fired in the Marine Corps? And it was in reference to the relief of the battalion commander with the 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. Lieutenant Colonel Mike Regner was relieved of his command because the MEF commander, Lieutenant General Karsten Heckel, had lost confidence in him based on the investigation, the preliminary investigation, and I guess other reporting that had been done to him relative to the incident where 8 Marines and 1 sailor drowned off the coast of California. I mean, you still have to serve. If you've already are eligible to retire, you could put in your papers and you can retire, you know, at the soonest date that they will allow you to retire. If you're not retirement eligible, you have to put in a letter of resignation, and then they will give you a date when you can, you know, leave active duty. And so normally you are taken and put into some other job that, you know, that uses some of your talents, but is kind of off to the side. So that's normally what happens until you leave the service. And some guys stay around until they're retirement eligible, and then others leave immediately. So normally you are, put out to pasture maybe, might be the right term. Put out to pasture. I have a question. Why do I get mail on Saturday? I don't rightly know. What percentage of your mail is anything but stupid advertisements? You know? I looked at my mail this morning. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And why am I getting that garbage on Saturday? Give everybody 2 days off. You can run the operation side of the U.S. Postal Service, but not the mail carriers. Do we really need mail 6 days a week now? I think that the Postal Service could save itself some money, cut back its service. And you're getting your mail Monday through Friday. Is there a compelling reason why people need mail on Saturday? I don't think so. Just a thought. I have a few more thoughts, but it's Friday, so we will begin the program. Whitney Houston makes this morning official with the Nation song, and God help us, right? God help us. And this is dedicated to the country today. That I don't know how, but in some way, shape, or form, the United States can find a way that we can, dare I say, become more fair. That the institutions that are supposed to fuel honest discussion and fairness somehow or other find that. And that some of their primary purpose is not advocacy. There's a way that you can become an advocate. But in a democracy, right, there's organizations that have functions in a democracy. So here's to that thought that somehow or other, the fix goes away. And if you want to be less than civil, there's places you can go to find that. But that that civil discourse and fair discourse somehow or other get embraced in this country. Because let me tell you, I just see violence at the end of all of this. When you see that there is no chance, when the fix is in and that narrative gets louder and more obvious and more obvious, and I'll tell you what, you know, this past week, again, 1619 project gets blasted all over the nation, filled with historical fiction, filled with false assertions. And now you have intellectuals standing up and saying, hey, but it's wrong. It's wrong. And now you even have columnists at the New York Times saying it's failed. But that's blasted all over the nation. Why? Because it fits the Facebook narrative. When you have Shelby Steele, who is banned, right, whose content is censored, right, off of Amazon's streaming platform, never allowed to see the light of day. When you see blatant censorship on social media platforms that have an agenda, and then you see on the cherry on top is two debates that are so different in tone, it's stunning. Even to the most like nonpartisan people, it's absolutely stunning. And even partisans say, yeah, that was kind of crazy. So maybe someday we can find our way short of violence. Here's to that. Here's to that hope.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Currently in Quantico, whoa, got cold on the East Coast. Partly sunny and 56 down the coast. At Camp Lejeune, it is partly sunny, 79. 29 Palms, sun and 78. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, sun and 65. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 73. Okinawa, dark cloudy, 75. Down under in Darwin, it is dark cloudy, 78, so they've cooled off. And in Norway, they've cooled off as well. Partly sunny and 52. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is partly sunny and 65. Today, looking for a high of 88. 83 tomorrow, and then a cooling trend on Sunday, Monday, and into early next week, into the high 70s, which is beautiful weather out here. So that is a look at your weather. I don't want to take a break. I want to talk about three things. I want to talk about the filibuster, and I saw some reporting on the filibuster, and I saw an opinion piece, so I want to share that with you. I want to talk about race and gender in the Marine Corps. We had a bit of a conversation about it yesterday during the Lynch, Kinney, and Costantini event, and so I didn't have any numbers in front of me. It was just what I've seen in my career, what I thought to be true. So, well, then I actually went and I looked up numbers, and lo and behold, yeah, our uninformed observations turns out to be true. So, how about that? So I want to talk about race in the Marine Corps. So yesterday, you know, our unscientific observation was that that if you're a minority officer, that the Marine Corps is looking for you, and you will get promoted. And I think what you see in the officer corps bears that out. Overall, black officers are 5% of the Marine Corps overall. At the second lieutenant to captain, company grade officers, so those who come in, that's 4.8%. of the Marine Corps. Major to colonel is 5.4. So they grow as a percentage of the Marine Corps. So they're advanced above and beyond other racial segments. Right? And then from the 07 to the 010, that's brigadier general to general, they are 7% of the Marine Corps. So they continue to grow, all right? So they continue to get promoted. So the Marine Corps takes something that starts at 4.8% and grows that percentage to 7%. Okay. Now know that they're 13% of the total population. So 7% of the Marine Corps general officer population is black. Curious though, and standing in stark contrast to that, are Hispanic officers. Overall, they make up 8% of the Marine Corps. I believe they make up 16% of the population. Lieutenants, they make up 8.6, right? And if you're any bit of a statistician, you know if the average overall is 8 and we start at 8.6%, that doesn't bode well for percentages as they go further in their career. It means that number's coming down. So they go from 8.6 as lieutenants and captains to 7.1 at lieutenant majors, lieutenant colonels to colonels. And then general officers, they go to 3.4%. So Hispanic numbers drop significantly, while black numbers increase significantly. On the enlisted side, our assessment was just eyeball test that the Marine Corps is overrepresented by minorities. So overall, you have a Marine Corps that is black and Hispanic, 32% black and Hispanic, right? I think, 16 and 13 is 29%. So overall, Marine Corps over national averages for numbers. Here's what's interesting, though. For black Marines, from private to Lance Corporal, they are 11%. From corporal to, Staff Sergeant, they are 11.2%. And from Staff Sergeant to Sergeant Major, they're 16.1%. So our unscientific conclusions are consistent with the data, and that is, black composition at the rank of private is 11, and their composition of our staff and CO Corps senior type is 16%. So they are advanced in greater numbers. Hispanics, a little bit different story again. They compose 20% of the Marine Corps, 22% at the rank of private, and then at the rank of sergeant major, 20%. So that they're pretty consistent, and they go down about 1.5%. Women, and this is 2006 to 2020, and I'll give you the differential in terms of officer numbers overall. 5.8, so almost 6% of the Marine Corps is female in 2006. In 2020, 7.5% of the Marine Corps is female. All right. At the entry level in the officer corps, they form 8.7%. At the general officer level, they form 1.1%. On the enlisted side, in 2006, they were 6.2% of, In 2006, they were 6.2% of the Marine Corps. In 2016, which is the last year that the Marine Corps has data, they are 8.1%. Females start as 6.2% of the Marine Corps. I'm sorry, as 8.6% of the Marine Corps. And currently, they represent 5.4% of the senior ranks in the Marine Corps. So those are the numbers, and that was just put out here in the last, probably 90 days by the Marine Corps. So what was interesting is that our unscientific observations were in fact corroborated by the data. And the challenge for the Marine Corps, both in terms of women and in terms of minorities, is to become more competitive and more appealing to those who can get to the highest levels of enlisted leadership and officer leadership. And that, my friends, is a very, very competitive space. So again, I wanted to share that data. And before I talk about the filibusters, because history is ironic, right? Mail on Saturday. Now you're fucking with the Postal Union's gravy train. Well, is it the Postal Service in trouble? Like, why do I need my junk mail on Saturday? Anybody answer that? Bueller? Anybody? I don't. I mean, most of my business is done, on the internet. most of my, you know, my electrical bill, you know, my payments, most of that stuff is all electronic now. I don't get one bill that I pay in the mail anymore. Not one. I get notifications about different stuff that I try to shut off as quick as I can. But what do I need the U.S. Postal Service delivering on Saturday for? Oh, for the gravy train? Gotcha. The four states in the greatest financial problems in this country all have what? A keen partnership between the state workers' unions, to include teachers, and the ruling political party. Illinois on the verge of bankruptcy, right? California on the verge of bankruptcy. New Jersey and New York. All four states teetering on the brink because they cannot support the pension obligations they have. Interestingly enough, Illinois and California both have ballot measures trying to get more tax revenue. Yeah, out of their states that they already tax at a blistering rate. Before I get to the news, I want to talk about the filibuster. If you listen to the program at all, I think, oh, I got to do Bevson in the weather from Saskatchewan. Chris did earlier, but I don't see it here. Bev's weather up in Saskatchewan, chilly in Churchbridge, clear skies with a west wind of 13 for today. The current temperature is 16 degrees, and it feels like 5 above. The afternoon high in Saskatchewan is going to be 34. And she sent a photograph of the Canadians refer to, you know, like in the United States, we say fourth grade, right? In Canada, they say grade four. It's just, you know, when you live in proximity to the border. Did he graduate from grade 12? Yeah, he did. Anyway, so she takes, there's a picture of her fourth grade classroom the day she retired. And it looks very much like the classrooms that I went to school in, right? The desks with the kind of the slanted top with the chair bolted to the desk and the kind of the rectangle underneath the top of your desk below it with the opening kind of facing your waist. Yeah, that. Yeah, in fact, it's identical to the classrooms that I went to school in. Nice. I want to talk about the filibuster, and if you've watched any of the hearings, you've seen, you know, the Democrats, you know, crying how wrong this is, but there's nothing they could do. And the person they have to thank for all of that is none other than somebody who I hate, Harry Reid, who I think is one of the worst human beings. Right. He's in there with Don Rumsfeld, George Bush, right? Just people that if they were on fire, you know, you'd look for something flammable to toss on top of them. I know that's horrible to say. That's how I feel, though. The war is lost, he said, which aided our enemies. I mean, what a complete piece of shit. He was in the news earlier this week saying that the United States is sitting on UFO information. He's shilling for a friend of his who's in the UFO business. Ah. He's a whore, right? He's a whore. Anyway, interesting piece by the Wall Street Journal editorial board about Harry Reid's filibuster legacy. Democrats are paying a dear price for their procedural radicalism. So, Amy Coney Barrett seems headed for Senate confirmation after an impressive week of hearings, and the Democrats in despair might want to consider the price for their procedural radicalism. Now, know this, that the filibuster and cloture, right, the 60-person rule, they're not written in the Constitution. They are Senate rules, okay? New Jersey Senator Cory Booker summed up the Democratic mood at the Judiciary Committee on Thursday when, with his remark that said, "This goose is pretty much cooked." The sous chef was his own former majority leader, Harry Reid. Harry blew up the filibuster on judicial nominations in 2013 in order to confirm three liberals to the D.C. District Court of Appeals. And why did he do that? Because the president of the United States at the time, Barack Obama, was ruling by executive order. And he needed the D.C., you know, District Court of Appeals, right, to be dominated by liberals. So let's look into that. The piece goes on. That raw exercise of partisan political power, as Senator Lamar Alexander called it at the time, he a Republican, exempted Supreme Court nominees. But the departure from norms set the precedent to confirm justices with just 51 votes. Mitch McConnell chimed in at the time, "You'll regret this, and you may regret this a lot sooner than you think." The Wall Street Journal wrote at the time that the next GOP president should line up Federalist Society alumni for judicial nominations like planes taking off at O'Hare International Airport. Imagine two or three more Clarence Thomases on the high court confirmed with 51 Senate votes. Planned Parenthood can send its regrets to Harry Reid. Democrats compounded that blunder in 2017 by trying to filibuster Justice Neil Gorsuch's nomination, who, in replacing the late Justice Anton Scalia, didn't significantly alter the ideological composition of the court. Mr. McConnell then finished what Mr. Reid started by ending the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. The Democrats might have kept their filibuster option to exert influence on replacements for Justices Kennedy and Ginsburg. The final filibuster scorecard, the Democrats jammed through three appellate judges but paved the way for Republicans to confirm three Supreme Court justices. Thank you, Harry. Democrats are now promising to eliminate the legislative filibuster if they win Senate control on November 3rd. They might want to keep in mind that once it's gone, Republicans will only need 51 votes to dismantle whatever Democrats pass. So, interesting. And Barack Obama said that, you know, recently said that, you know, we should do away with the filibuster. So there you have it. But again, if go ahead and do away with it. It wasn't part of what the founding fathers killed. It was a gentleman's agreement in the Senate. Well, now it's kind of a sham. It's used for some business as usual, but for extraordinary events, we kick that son of a bitch straight to the curb. And Supreme Court justices get that thing kicked to the curb. Not going to play by the Marcus of Queensberry rules. Yeah. Yep. So we're going to, now I want to take a break, and then we'll come back. We'll do some news headlines. Greg Lotus is going to join me this morning here on a Friday. So Greg, always interesting. Somebody sent me an email about equipment. So Greg's a hunter. We'll get his favorite piece of cold weather equipment that's not boots or a coat. So something else. And then somebody else in a conversation said, you know, he's an interesting guy, Mac. Been through a lot of all of his struggles. What would he say was the most difficult struggle in his life? So Greg will join us here in about 15-20 minutes, something like that. So we'll take a quick break right now. We'll come back and check news headlines. More of All Marine Radio, this fine program, coming up next after about a 2-minute break.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis, but sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah, my go-to, karaoke.
She left the yellow rose and a long neck bottle on the table beside my bed.
I should be singing this, I know.
Little note said I had a good time. It was written in lipstick red. She didn't sign her name. I wonder if that's a little secret that she keeps. Ooh, she's walking around in my sleep. Dream walking, pillow talking. She's calling.
Alright, to the news we go with my thanks to Toby Keith there. You don't hear much about Toby Keith anymore. I don't know. Is he still recording? Headline, Stars and Stripes. Army's 5th Corps, with a long history in Europe, is back in action. The Army's storied 5th Corps officially reactivated Friday during a ceremony at Fort Knox, Kentucky, but it isn't clear when a portion of the unit will head to Poland to take up its new mission. Poland. Yeah, that would be east of Germany. The military announced in February that it was reforming the 5th Corps to bring more command and control support to an expanding army mission in Europe in September, which is all part of the European deterrence initiative, right? Peace through strength. Sweden got the memo. Sweden is increasing their budget 40%. Yeah, in case you don't pay attention. Ohio man even picked up on that. Yeah. Right? In September, the Army selected Poznan, Poland, as a site for a command post that was expected to see its first soldiers arrive in October. And the Poles love us, right? The Germans hate us. Until we decide we're leaving, then it's like, oh, what do you mean? Why? So that in the news. Next. Soldiers won't be classified AWOL under new Army policy until the Army proves they're intentionally absent. You know, copy a page from the Navy with their duty status whereabouts unknown when they encounter the same thing. So, House lawmakers urge Senate to halt Trump's plan to pull troops out of Germany. Why? What is so significant about Germany? Get over it. Representative Ruben Gallego, Democrat, Arizona, warned Thursday that if President Donald Trump continues with his plan to withdraw troops and their families from Germany, it could open the door for Russian aggression in Europe. Right? Like, are you kidding me? Gallegos, he's a Marine Corps veteran. Dude, we're moving east. Get your map out. One wonder if you ever read a map in the Marine Corps. Some lawmakers have challenged the plan announced by the White House in early June to pull 9,500 troops out of Germany, which would reduce the American military force on the continent by about a third. The 34,000 U.S. troops in Germany play a key role in reinforcing. Move them east. Move them east, man. Poland. Yeah, Poland. Germany. Sorry, not playing that game anymore. DOD study says coronavirus transmission risk on a crowded airplane with people wearing masks is low. Whew. You can take that to the bank. Family of a contractor killed during an Air Force training exercise awarded $25 million in a wrongful death suit. Oh. So that's Stars and Stripes today. Top headlines from the Wall Street Journal. U.S. retail spending picked up strongly in September. Kind of an interesting little story here. Retail sales increased in September for the fifth month in a row as consumers prepared for further months of working and studying from home by spending strongly on vehicles, sporting goods, and home improvement stores. Not sure why vehicles would be part of working from home, but they are. Sporting goods, home fitness stuff, you can't buy that stuff anywhere. And Home Depot, I think, is going to report one of the best years they've ever had. Consumers are playing catch-up on spending. Retail sales, a measure of purchasing at stores, restaurants, and online, increased a seasonally adjusted 1.9% in September from the month prior. These are really blowout numbers, said Craig Johnson, president of the Customer Growth Partners, a consulting firm. So good news from the economy. So, and what you have mixed news from the economy, right? You have unemployment kind of going sideways, but you have consumers adjusting to it and spending more. So kind of interesting. But again, I don't think until you open up the restaurants, the bars, and all the, you know, all those types of businesses across the country, you're not going to see the rest of those numbers move, in my opinion. As an amateur economist, that's right. Story in here. Above the fold, how Mark Zuckerberg became a political animal. Another story, Twitter and Facebook face concerns over election interference and censorship. And that's all related to their censuring. And again, the censuring went well beyond the New York Post. So the New York Post, right, the president's press secretary, and there was two other people that I can't remember from 20 minutes ago. Pretty stunning stuff. Top stories in USNI News. The Coast Guard begins at-sea testing of unmanned surface vehicles to tackle illegal fishing and crime. Now, I'm curious what an unmanned boat would do that an unmanned aerial vehicle can't. The test and evaluation, which began last week, will run through November 5th, being conducted by the U.S. Coast Guard Research and Development Center and local Hawaii units, and will focus on USVs, unmanned surface vehicles from manufacturers gives two names, as well as Coast Guard-owned autonomous research made by Metal Shark. The evaluation will examine each vessel's ability to provide persistent maritime domain awareness, especially in remote areas of the ocean, while potentially applicable to many Coast Guard missions. So they're just going to be electronic beacons collecting, extending your sensors and then data linked. One of the companies noted in a press release over the summer that its unmanned surface vehicle package included the vessel itself that is designed to be at sea for 12 months, detection sensors, including optical cameras, automated identification system receivers, optional radar or infrared cameras for nighttime capabilities, and artificial intelligence and machine learning software that takes images, picks out targets of interest, and alerts the operator of what it's found, which is important given the likely Coast Guard mission will involve a lot of roaming around in open ocean and waiting to see if ships or animals appear amid the blue sky and the blue water. So, interesting. Interesting. So, these things are solar-operated cameras with radar, possibly, and they're sitting out as beacons in international water, collecting and reporting. Yeah. Uncle Big Brother is watching and listening. The USS Ronald Reagan is in the South China Sea again. Yeah, so that in the news. But the biggest story this week, I would tell you, is the story about the Navy underestimating the cost of its first frigate by 40%. I mean, it's not even close. And what is the impact of that on other shipbuilding? And then the Marine Corps. Yeah. And I don't see, there's one other story in the Marine Corps. And Grant Newsham is very sensitive to this. He gets emotional when I ask him about this. Are the U.S. Army and the U.S. Marine Corps competing for missions in the Pacific? With the U.S. military locked in on what it sees as a long-term competition with the People's Republic of China for ascendancy in the Indo-PACOM region, two services seeking to pivot away from heavy ground conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan are looking towards missiles as a ticket towards relevance in a potential future conflict. The Marine Corps and the Army are both working towards fielding long-range strike and anti-ship missiles to hold off Chinese targets at risk within the first and second island chains. Both have talked about putting supplies, gear, and forces forward to be able to rapidly respond in a crisis. Both are actively discussing sacrificing older equipment and upgrades for current equipment to help pay for the modernization they need. The expectation in the Pentagon, however, is that the military will see flat defense budgets at best going forward. Some defense watchers argue that limited resources means the funding may depend on whose concepts carry the most weight among defense planners. However, others believe the potential China problem will get everybody funded. Then it goes on to discuss the way the Army and the Marine Corps are both approaching a conflict in the South China Sea that will probably be maritime in nature, aviation dominated, and how does each one of those services get into that fight? So competition, I think, natural between the Marine Corps and the Navy, between the Marine Corps and the Army. Top stories in Early Bird. Number one, new AWOL policy comes after a macabre summer called attention to missing soldiers. This is a lot of PR stuff. The Army's going to put more emphasis on it. What are they going to do? Are they going to deputize soldiers and send them out to look for people? Are they going to stand up their own investigative arm? You know, how are they going to do this? CID going to get on this as opposed to investigating rapes and murders? Good luck with that. Watchdog to audit Pentagon's use of COVID funds on defense contracts. Number three, Taliban to reset commitments under an agreement with Washington to bring down violence. It's U.S. envoy, our U.S. envoy said. Now, we've talked about this as being, you know, overtly pessimistic about Afghanistan. Afghanistan has gone overtly pessimistic about itself because in Helmand this week, they straight up got after it. All the while we're going to sit down and talk peace, and the Afghans believe that the Taliban believes that the United States is leaving no matter what, they should know better, really. Because as soon as the election's over, you know, whoever's the president won't be constrained by the election, and they could say, okay, it's now conditions-based again. And that's the game we play. The U.S. Special Envoy to Afghanistan said on Thursday he had struck an agreement with the insurgent Taliban to reset their commitments under, what do you mean reset? That's just bullshit, right? We agreed to reset actions by strictly adhering to implementation of all elements of the U.S.-Taliban agreement and all commitments made, he said. At present, too many Afghans are dying. With the reset, we expect the number to drop significantly. Okay, do you believe that? I got some oceanfront property in Iowa I want to sell you. Increasing SELA funding to fix tankers in the 2022 budget is a priority, according to the Secretary of Defense. And number five, services met recruiting goals as COVID forced military to modernize, according to the SECDEF. So, there you have it. All the news fit to know. Who I'm not sure who says that. So, all the news fit to print. Who's that? New York Times, Washington Post, one of those two. Anyway, wish that, hey, too bad they don't live up to it. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Gregory Lotus. Yeah. He will join me, so don't touch that dial. More of this fine program coming up next.